Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan and from the Mandalay Bay Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney, what's up, brother?
How is Sin City?
It's really cool. You've been to Las Vegas, right?
I have not.
Really?
No, I haven't. It's never really, outside of mafia movies, it's never really held any appeal for me. And they say the golden days of the mob are gone, so I have no use to be there.
It's funny because you're probably one of the biggest degenerates I know.
That is closer to the truth than you can ever possibly really know, but that's for another podcast, I feel.
Yeah, well, first of all, you do have the city kind of wrong. It's not like I was going to say I haven't gambled a cent. That changed about 10 seconds ago because I did just put money down on the Sixers-Nets game tonight, which by now we'll know if I won or lost. But I don't really play I'm not a blackjack guy or poker guy, really. But there's still so much to do here, even beyond that. I almost feel like Las Vegas is like unfairly labeled as just a gambling city. Like it's really not. It's just, I don't know. There's no other city that I can really compare it to. It's crazy. I'm surprised though that you've never been here. I will say though that before we get into the Champions League stuff, we've got a lot of that. Yesterday was such a dramatic day with Tottenham, with Liverpool. So we'll talk about all of that. Also, we haven't been on since the MLS Cup final. So obviously we have to give you our take on that. But JJ, I'm here because for ESPN, I was dispatched, I guess you could say, to the Major League Baseball winter meetings, which are being held here. And you know what this is? I would say that this is
the most boring time of your life.
I would call it the, I would say this is like the world capital of people who are wearing suits with sneakers, kind of. But like, you know how there are certain types of suits that I feel like are meant to kind of be worn with sneakers, like more slim fitting? Not here. It's just like people go halfway with it. Like they think, oh, no, because it's kind of, how can I say this nicely? It's kind of a nerdier brand of sports person.
Are you telling me that it's not the thin, nicely cut suit
right.
pants?
No,
it's a much more baggier men's warehouse version.
Right, it's like the suit that I wore to my bar mitzvah with sneakers. It just doesn't seem to work, but it's like the look that everyone here is sporting. I won't do it. I don't know about you, but I just won't bring myself to do it.
But also, you can just combine a nice jean with the sneakers and then wear the sports coat over the top with an open collared shirt. You know, it's fine. There's so many options for the guy out here. You're
so
listening
many.
To Fashion Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
So many options. I'll tell you what, let's get right to it. The reason that we're here today, I wanted to do this podcast yesterday, but somebody, I'm making a head motion towards New York City right now, wouldn't allow it. And, so now here we are. Yesterday, I could have done it from my hotel room. But now I'm taking a red eye home tonight, so I had to check out. But you demanded that this be as difficult as possible and that I do this today.
Anything
after I had been kicked out of my room.
Anything to mildly or severely inconvenience you.
Yeah, what's your deal?
I don't know, but can I begin like this?
Yeah.
Milner into Salah. He's turned away from Mario Rui. It's Mo Salah. He's in! Breakthrough for Liverpool. And guess who? Mo Salah scores. Things stand, it's Liverpool who are going into the last 16. 1-0 will do.
Nice to hear Clive Tildsley's voice on the call for that, JJ. I'm sure you enjoyed it.
I adore the fact that voice, which has been synonymous with so many great Champions League nights, usually for the red side of Manchester, not the red side of Liverpool. Just a perfect call, his tone, everything. It reminds me of the Champions League, and I love hearing him.
What an incredibly nerve-wracking day it was for Liverpool fans, and we'll get to Tottenham in a sec, but we'll start with Liverpool, obviously. God, that game was just sitting on a knife's edge for so long. If Sadio Mane, if Napoli go on to score a goal late in that game, the header that Alisson comes up with, that unbelievable save of the season so far, if that goes in, how does Sadio Mane live with himself? JJ. I mean, the three misses that he had, it was just like, it was a battle of like, can you top this in terms of just like worst misses of the Champions League so far?
Yeah, and I think that's what we need to demarcate from this game. The idea that this was a tense night that could compare to, say, the Europa League a couple of seasons back against Dortmund, the second leg where Liverpool actually conceded at Anfield. This was nothing like it. Had Liverpool done their business and as you pointed out, Sadio Mane converted one of those chances, they were home and hosed. They dominated this game. I mean, look, I think there's a few viewers that get, or listeners that have got annoyed with me. I flipped from saying the predominant chances are the best, the preponderance of chances went to a certain team, and I've started using XG. But if you look at the XG, it was the most reflective expected goals you could possibly see. Liverpool dominated that game. And Andrew, I can't account for Mane's just, you know, lackadaisical attitude in front of goal. It could have been really, really costly. And it's a rather good thing that we spent £66 million on a goalkeeper.
Oh my God. Before we get to that, because I saw a tweet from Phil McNulty that I wanted to put in front of you. Staying with Mane for a sec, it's funny that you use the word lackadaisical with him, because you're right. It does come off looking that way when he's missing these chances that he should be converting. But by the same token, like, he is working hard and doing well to put himself in position to have all these chances. Like, I sometimes feel bad for some of these guys where, like, all you think about is the end product just going completely wrong. But, he does, I guess, deserve some credit that he's at the center of so many things for them. He usually is better than that.
Absolutely. I think he's been a bit streaky this season, and that would be the concern. I mean, I think he's an excellent striker. One of the chances last night, the ball that was centered to him from Robertson was a little bit behind him, and Ospina pulled off the save. But the one on the left-hand side, again, where he was about to slide, he should have just slid it home, and he somehow contrives to hit the side of the net. I mean, that in big games, Andrew, you can't have that. Now, did Salah have chances outside of the brilliant goal that he took where he skinned Koulibaly and just drilled it somehow between the legs of Ospina? Yeah, he had two other chances he absolutely should convert. So I don't want to put all the blame on Mane, but his misses were the most notable.
I know, but it's silly here. We're talking about blame and the goals that didn't go in, but Liverpool won. Like, they did it, and it is Mo Salah, the goal that you heard before. You asked a question about how true that there's this perception that this was, now we're starting to see Liverpool of last season, like sliding back into that kind of form. And look, maybe there is truth to that. And for me, that pretty much revolves around one person. Like, if you think about Liverpool and their form last year, you think about, Mo Salah was just scorching hot. And now, for most of this season so far, whether it be the Champions League or the Premier League, he's been fine. He hasn't been like a liability or anything like that, like the way some people have portrayed him to be. But, if you're talking about how now Liverpool are starting to look like Liverpool of last year, well, it's because he's starting to look like Mo Salah of last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, we should remember that what he did last season was so, out of the ordinary, so exceptional that, if there's any kind of variation from that, we shouldn't be shocked, And look, his hat-trick at the weekend against Bournemouth was incredible. And he looked like the Mo Salah of last season. And also, I would like to point out that it's not just been a Salah problem up front. Roberto Firmino hasn't been quite the same. Mane, as we've pointed out. So it's more of a unit rather just any individual.
Yeah. Now we go from the front to the back with Liverpool, because that's where the focus was. We can talk about the Mane misses and all that, but the fact of the matter is, like, if Mane scored one more goal, it wouldn't have really mattered. If Napoli had gotten that one, it would have thrown things completely out of whack to the point where Liverpool would have needed three. So, yeah, if Mane had converted a couple of them, then it would have been important. But in the end, it was about the defending that Liverpool had to do in order to get through. And they did enough. And obviously, JJ, so much of that is about Alisson and the save at the end. And I saw this. Tell me what you make of this tweet. Because we talk about key players all the time leaving clubs to go to other clubs and how frustrating that can be. But Phil McNulty said the financial math says one Coutinho equals Alisson plus Van Dijk. And that adds up to a more complete Liverpool team than this time last year. Is that, like, looking at that in that sense now, you take that trade, right?
Oh, 100%. You absolutely do. It was just the ability of those in charge to identify the two areas of need. Now, look, did it take much identifying? No, but to be able to realize that you could give up those other pieces and make your team better. Absolutely. Andrew, do you want to hear the call on the Alisson save that made all
yes,
the difference
please.
From Milik? Because for me, this is again Clive Tilsey at his best and my heart in my mouth.
Oh, he's found his way through and Milik's there. What a save that is by Alisson. Blocked by Lovren. Orange carriers.
Well, under the circumstances, that is as good a save as you'll see. That's why you pay the big money for a top goalkeeper. To pull out stops like this, just when it matters. Magnificent from Alisson.
Now, I'm going to talk to you about some more tweets. Unbelievably, there were people who were saying, well, it was shot straight at him. First of all...
So, like, positioning doesn't matter.
No, the fact that he makes, the fact that he makes an aggressive move yeah. towards the striker as well is just... You know, I mean, completely overlooked as well. Of course, all these things matter. And by the way, a better tweet pointed out that Peter Schmeichel made an absolute career out of those kind of saves. So I am not going to criticize Alisson one little bit for that. I just thought I was waiting for the net to ripple. Milik was going to score. That was it. And that would have been the most horrific end to the game. But Alisson came up big and... That was a real drama. The drama of this game was not so much that Liverpool or Napoli created it because of an end-to-end battle. It was simply because Liverpool left Napoli in it right to the death.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I mentioned the Coutinho thing, and, like, it's tough, man. It can so go either way. We've seen it, you know, with different clubs. You know, Lukaku leaving Everton. Ask an Everton fan what it's like to have a key player leave. It's not easy. Like, it's not a given. But if you have smart people in charge that know, you know, that are willing to reinvest big money into other good players, it can work. I think now we see with things like, you know, Coutinho leaving and the way Liverpool have responded, and you know, you can even go back a little bit to the bail money with Spurs. You know, Christian Eriksen came from that. Eric Lamela came from that. So, yeah, as long as you have like smart people in charge who are willing to put in the work and the money to reinvest, it's not the end of the world. Like, if your team loses a great player, it's not all over for you. And I think, you know, Liverpool are once again proof of that. Now, I wanted, there was one other tweet in that mention there, along with Alisson, was also Virgil van Dijk. Now, he was maybe lucky to avoid a red card early on in that match. Now, I saw his quote afterwards was just like the height of irony to me. Did you happen to see what he said? Because I have it here in front of me.
No, go read it to me.
So he says, "I don't think it was a bad challenge at all," Van Dijk said. "Unfortunately, I touched him, but I would never go in to hurt him or anything like that. I had the ball, and obviously with the wet pitch, you slide through, and I touched him, but that's football." JJ, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Jurgen Klopp have something to say about players sliding in recklessly on wet pitches over the weekend?
He said you have to be absolutely careful. The referee should have a word. And
a few days later, his own guy is lucky to avoid it. It's incredible.
Yeah, and we pointed out the hypocrisy of talking about wet pitches and sliding tackles when, really, if Klopp was asked and every manager was asked, well, we're going to remove the sliding tackle on a wet night, they would just look at you with such disdain. So I don't know. Look, I don't think Van Dijk went to hurt Dries Mertens. He went, but he definitely caught him. It was actually, it just goes to show you the grey areas that we operate within the game. There can be a great tackle, which can also be a foul. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, and by the way, too, like, he specifically mentions how he's not going in there to try to hurt him. Okay, well, that's fine. Good. Like, that's what you should do. But that doesn't mean that you avoid red. Like, not every red card offense is because somebody was intentionally trying to hurt someone else. It can still happen by accident.
Absolutely.
So that just rings hollow to me. So he might have been a little bit fortunate. I don't know. I saw that and I was like, I wonder what Jurgen Klopp is thinking as he's hearing his players say about, you know, sliding on wet pitches. It's just very funny to me. But you do survive. They move on. And you must have been, I mean, were you just like breathing into a bag at the end of that? Eyes partially covered.
It's strange. Like I said, for 75% of that game, I was so comfortable. And I just expected Liverpool to get that second goal and for the game to peter out somewhat. But the longer it went on, I got really worried. And actually, when I saw Milik come on, because you know I'm a fan of Napoli, and he's not the most prolific goal scorer, but I thought it would be just our luck if a guy pops up just like him, physical, with a bit of size, gets into the box, gets a break. He'll stab one home and that'll be it. And I won't be able to contain my frustration. Yeah. And when I saw it play out in front of me. Now look, Callahan, we should mention.
Oh my God.
Oh my word. You're talking about misses on the Liverpool side. Carlo Ancelotti must be... What could you say to him? Callahan himself must be devastated. But how he's missed that, I do not know. I guess it bobbled up, or I guess he expected Robertson to make a play on the ball. But that is one of the all-time misses, and it's one that's going to haunt Napoli, probably more than the Milik, the save by Alisson from Milik.
Yeah, well, it was a European night at Anfield, which means Liverpool have to win. It's in the rule book.
Don't be like that. Come on.
Now, the rule book, we move from that to a different rule book.
Right.
One which typically does not end the way that this one did. Tottenham, somehow they do it. It's being termed as, what, Mission Impossible. And they have come through, and they managed to escape the group stage and are into the knockout round after a 1-1 draw in Barcelona. My God, JJ. I texted you at one point and I said, wow, it's just like the height of non-Spursiness for Tottenham to lose to Barcelona, but then Inter to also lose to PSV. And then as soon, like, it couldn't have been more than 15 minutes after I sent that Inter then scored to equalize with PSV, and we thought, okay, well now, you know, things are normalizing in the world once more. But no, it's funny, JJ, how kind of random figures just can insert their name into history in the blink of an eye. Like Lucas Moura has turned out to be a good player for Spurs, but you know, he's not Kane, he's not Eriksen, you know, and now he's a name that will kind of live on forever for them.
Yeah, it was just so stunning to me because, like you said, you expected it to play out a certain way, and me and you were back and forth texting. Now, I wasn't watching it, and I only caught highlights, but what I was noticing on Twitter as well was how well Spurs were actually playing, and I thought, well, you know, there's still a chance for them. They need things to go right in the other game, and I never felt... that it was Spurs. I thought there'd be a moral victory for Spurs in this, that they'd go to Barcelona and play well, but Inter would do their business. And I cannot believe Inter didn't do it in the end.
Yeah, Tottenham do very well in the Moral Victory Cup. We talk about that all the time. Now, you brought up a tweet from Guillaume Balague, who said, this is without any doubt one of the best performances of a foreign team in the Camp Nou for many years, struggling to remember a team that was so good in so many ways. I actually have numbers to back that up. It's one thing for a guy just to say it, but this comes from a tweet from Spurs Statman. He says, Tottenham Hotspur had more possession, 51.2 to 48.8. Total shots, 17 to 14. Shots on target, 7 to 3. Big chances created, 5 to 1. Completed passes. When does a team ever outpass Barcelona? 466 to 442. Attacking third passes, look at this number, 177 to 88. And crosses, 13 to 4.
Now,
this was all in Barcelona that Tottenham went in there and did that to them. How did they not win when you see numbers like that is the question.
Well, absolutely. And then it would have been an even more memorable night for Spurs. But, you know, when you look at how they've got through 8 points from six games and it was a tie in the new camp to get through, you're just delighted that's what's happened. You're just gonna put that one behind you. It's a famous night. You got through. Okay, you didn't win the game, but I will say this: Barcelona still had some impressive talent out there, and Spurs had to come over adversity. When I checked the Twitter feed or the ticker, whatever I was watching that was telling me the scores, and I saw Dembele had scored so early. Mm-hmm. It was as if, you know, this is going to be not just one of those nearly cases. It was going to be a hammering for Spurs. When Barcelona go 1-0 up so early like that at the Nou Camp, you think it spells trouble. It was incredibly resilient and skillful and well planned by Pochettino to go on then and play better and equalize with a really great goal. And I wanted to put this to you, Andrew. One of the criticisms that's often leveled at Pochettino by Spurs fans is that he doesn't make substitutions soon enough, or he doesn't make them at the right time, or in some cases right. He doesn't make them at all. I'll tell you, Son for Lucas Moura was one of the most inspired ones we've seen from him.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, Lucas Moura obviously now comes on and plays the role of hero. And, you know, that's probably... he's been an interesting character for Tottenham because obviously in the beginning of the year he was starting so much and he was player of the month for the first month of the season in the Premier League. But I kind of think that this now is his best role as some kind of like super sub. He's so fast. He's so quick with the ball. He makes good runs. So to inject him into a game, when did he come on in this one? I'm trying to remember exactly when it was. I don't have it in front of me. But at any rate, you know, to bring him into a game against a tired defense, that's a difficult thing to contend with when you've been chasing Harry Kane and Son for the first, 70 minutes or whatever. So
yes, but let's not feel too much for the opposition in this one because they were able to call on Busquets and Messi.
And Messi,
I'm not sure I'm going.
Oh no, look, I'm not crying any tears for them. I'm just saying that this is an appropriate role for Lucas Moura. I think once Son came back, people wondered, well, what will he become? And I think this feels right to me. Like a sub in a close game, in a tie game when you're down a goal or something like that, I think he comes on and he can change the dynamic of a game. Now I don't know if he changed this one altogether because I thought Tottenham had settled in to this one pretty nicely after the rough start. But man, a run right down the center of the box, good build up play, Harry Kane, perfect ball into the center and bang, that's it. History right there.
And also if we want to talk about Spursiness, you had that bit of luck that Spurs don't generally enjoy, let's put it that way. There was the width of a post that denied Coutinho.
He hit the post twice.
Yeah. So, there was that. And there was also the massive collapse or failure by Inter to do what they needed to do. So, look, all I would say is both Liverpool and Spurs had slices of luck to help them through, but, that was some dramatic evening.
It was. It really was. It's fun. I mean, if you're a neutral, this is kind of why you love the sport and sports in general, for games like that where you've got teams kind of competing through other matches. It was a lot of fun. It really was. And, man, JJ, I will say as a Tottenham fan, I do take some measure of joy in, all the trash talking that was being thrown at them about their billboards regarding, the new stadium being the home of the Champions League. And when it looked like Tottenham were going to be crashing out and they hadn't played a Champions League match yet at the new stadium, they were kind of the subjects of ridicule. But now they give themselves another chance, possibly, to play a home fixture, Champions League football in London, in the new White Hart Lane. I enjoyed that greatly.
This is why we say this all the time.
I bloody love football.
Yep, absolutely. And you also asked one question that I wanted to address. You said, does this change the complexion of Spurs season so far?
Oh, yes.
Yes, 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 100%, 1,000 times over. Because if you think back near the beginning of the season, what was the only reason that people were giving them a hard time? Aside from the fact that they didn't make any moves in the transfer window, which, whatever. I don't even think about that anymore as a thing because I just love this team so much. But like, it was only because they were struggling so badly in the Champions League. No one thought that they weren't supposed to win a title this year. This was always going to be Manchester City with Liverpool as the what people viewed to be the number two. And I give credit to Tottenham for hanging around and possibly being a third horse in that race. But like, that's not what the season was ever really supposed to be about. So the only reason people could be ripping them at the start of the year was because they were slow to get out of the gate in the Champions League. And they rectified that. And now they're going through in dramatic fashion. So I don't know. Maybe somebody would still say, no, their season still is what it is. But no, I think the fact that they were able to kind of right the wrong of what they were doing in Europe, it has to change the way you judge them so far.
I would totally agree with that. A new complexion has been cast on the season. And you know what? It's all of a sudden, it's a lot sunnier for Spurs fans. And you're right in one sense. It would have always been thrown back in their faces how poor they were in Europe this season. Anything they did in the Premier League, there would always be that response. So just in terms of petty football conversations with rival team fans, it's nice to make it to the last 16.
Yeah. Before we take a break, JJ, I don't have a ton else to say about the Champions League. These were kind of the main events. I guess the one thing I saw, Ajax did draw with Bayern 3-3 today. This was, like, if we're talking about dark horse clubs heading into the knockout rounds, I think Ajax is one that I'm going to get on the back of here.
Caveat in this game because Kingsley Coman thought he'd won the game for Bayern Munich, and then it's an own goal off Schürrle that levels it up very late, 90+5.
Yeah.
But you are right to say that because Ajax over the two legs in the group stages have given Bayern Munich, who are still a power no matter what way you cut it, they've given them the full of it. And this player called Dusan Tadic,
yeah,
he has settled in nicely there.
Yeah, he certainly has. I think he leads them in goals. But yeah, they draw with Bayern in both of their matches against them, including at Bayern. They come out of this without a single defeat. I think they were 12 points over the course of their six games. They didn't lose once. Their only other draw was at Benfica, which there's not really any shame in that, in going to Portugal and coming away with a point. So, yeah, quietly, I would say Ajax have to be feeling somewhat good about themselves heading into the knockout rounds. What else? Any other takeaways for you?
Look, Real Madrid had their business done, really, but to fall at home to CSKA Moscow in the fashion that they did was notable. United at the Mestalla, so poor, with a comical own goal for the ages from the wonderful Phil Jones. City beating Hoffenheim, coming back from 1-0 down. That was interesting. And also, there's a beautiful Leroy Sané goal in there. But other than that, today, compared to yesterday, and not just because our teams are involved, things were a little more clearly shaken out in the Champions League. And so today was a little bit of a after a major event kind of thing. It was just a little bit quieter of a day compared to yesterday.
By the way, when do we start Horvath Watch? Another clean sheet, was it not?
Horvath Watch, yeah, is something would you believe it, maybe 3 weeks ago someone may have tweeted that we have to start following him now. But we have too many we have too many watches. It's far too many watches.
Well, because you're just so obsessed with the Henri watch. But,
va-va-voom.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a very, very quick break. So don't go anywhere. When we come back, we will give our thoughts on MLS Cup and Atlanta United. And I have a bone to pick with you about that, actually, for when we return. But don't go anywhere. Still a lot to get to. Oh, back now. You're in Mandalay Bay, JJ, in Las Vegas. Oh, let's see. MLS Cup Final.
The latest review of a Cup Final there has ever been. But
yeah, I know.
This week, look, this week with the winter meetings and everything going on, it was just difficult. So
last week when we were talking about Atlanta, I referred to them as a great club. And you almost fell out of your chair in laughter.
No, I didn't.
Quite frankly, it was humiliating.
I thought it was a little bit.
Why you felt the need to embarrass me publicly. And now I think you have to answer for this.
Look, I just felt that you bandied the term. I know what you meant, and I should have taken you at face value. You meant that they've assembled this great side that in their second season in MLS have done so much and have now won the whole thing. They've got the atmosphere going, etc., etc.
Right.
Again, it's a case of not my American brain, but my JJ European sensory overload of how a club should be, like the perceptions I have.
You're just the most arrogant person that I
know. No, I don't mean to be. It's just when you said a great club, I just kind of, I don't know.
In two years, they built one of the best teams that MLS has ever seen and a fan base that no one thought could ever be achieved in that city.
Yep, that's all fair. And I ignored all that context just to scoff at something you've said. That's basically it. That's how petty I am. So shall we talk about the game rather than do this kind of hauling JJ over the coals for things he's done?
I had predicted 3-0. And I would say it was close in that it was 2-0.
Johnny Matt's over here.
The only thing is, Atlanta were in control. I thought they were clearly the better team. I think much of what we thought would happen did. We thought Miguel Almiron and Joseph Martinez and Atlanta's defending would all be great in this game, and honestly, all of them were. Now, it could have been different. So that's the only reason I would say that maybe it wasn't quite as comprehensive or convincing as I think history will remember it. JJ, if Jeremy Ebobisi scores on that free header in front of Brad Guzan, look, I don't know that Portland go on and win the game, but I think maybe Atlanta's at least nervous in the second half.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. If you're looking for a sliding doors moment in a game where, let's be honest, Atlanta dominated and Portland struggled to carve out chances, that save by Guzan on 42 minutes, because it was straight after the Joseph Martinez goal. So Joseph Martinez scores on the turnover by Michael Parkhurst on 39 minutes. If you respond on 42 minutes, you go into halftime even. That is such a boost to what Portland are doing. It puts a little seed of doubt in Atlanta, makes them think they're in a game now and that they've got to be maybe pulled back a little bit from their attack in play. Mentally, it can have an effect, but it, once Guzan makes that save, my heart sank for them. I never felt they could rectify the situation after that. And, really, I mean, I get the Alvis Powell chance at 2-0 down. But then again, Escobar's goal was 10 minutes into the second half. That's a body blow. Think of it. 39 minutes, you go 1-0 up. 42 minutes, you stop what was almost seemed like a certain equaliser. And then 10 minutes into the second half, you can't even get your foot and then you're two behind. That was a body blow. That was terminal for Portland Timbers in terms of this game.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that it was just I just thought it was a complete performance from Atlanta. Like you mentioned on the first goal, Michael Parkhurst. Now, maybe it was a bit of a reckless pass to even kind of put Obobese in that position for Portland.
Yeah.
But Parkhurst is there. They press high. He comes up with the turnover, and then, bang, Martinez just slots around the keeper as he does. But it's funny. You ask now, like, I feel like we're removed enough from the game where you can only do so much analysis of the game itself, and you kind of start looking ahead. Atlanta's now in a weird position, right? Like, I'm reading today that Miguel Almiron is in talks to go to Newcastle.
Yeah, but I'm reading that Darren Eales has said it's going to have to be a huge number to get him.
He said it has to start with the number 3 or they're not even, or it's a non-starter.
Yeah.
Which I mean, look, it's so hard. Like,
and folks, is not 3 million.
Well, what do you think it is?
I think it's way more. He could be asking for 30 million. We don't know.
Oh, my God.
Three million? That seems low. That seems very low for a young player with the reputation he has and with the amount of interest he appears to be garnering from other clubs.
30 sounds like an incredibly huge number. I still don't know how to judge top-notch talent in this league. Like, I don't know what their value is. Like, who's the guy that has left? Like, can you think of any example, really, of, like, a striker or an attack-minded player leaving MLS and then going to Europe and dominating?
No, but I would, not off the top of my head, but by the same token, we've not seen a club go about its business in the way Atlanta have and have identified, through scouting, two players like Joseph Martinez and Almiron and even Barco. To an extent, although he hasn't quite...
Well, we haven't even really scratched the surface with him yet.
No, we haven't. But look at their policy, Andrew. It wasn't like, let's bring in proven winners. It's, let's bring in scouted, well-regarded talent. So this could be the first in a long line of players that do this, that MLS is the stopping off point, is the platform for a jump to Europe.
It's the curse of success. Like, but also, as dominant and great as they are, clubs are going to come calling.
Yeah, certainly. And... Here's the other side. It's from a monetary standpoint. If you're able to buy a player for minimal output and then flip him for the kind of money that Darren Eales is expecting, it's a very good business model. But more than that, just thinking about the specifics of Almiron going to Newcastle, we're hearing all these rumors and uncertainty about what's happening at the club. Are they going to really want to pay that kind of money for a player? When Mike Ashley isn't gone out the door yet. I don't think Mike Ashley hasn't, when you look what he's furnished Rafa Benitez with over the summer, it's hard to believe that they're going to pay 30 million. So maybe you're right. 3 million might be closer to it.
It can't. I understand, I guess, why Darren Eales would set a price tag as high as he is. It's his guy that he obviously doesn't want to lose. But man, that just, I don't know. That just feels like an unrealistically high number to me. For you're absolutely right. A club in a position that just like isn't, they're just not doing that kind of thing.
No, when's the last time they've done that? That would smash their transfer record.
Would it really?
I'm thinking right now.
I'd have to go back. And
I'm thinking right now. I think their last record signing was Michael Owen. That's,
oh my God.
It's 13 years ago. That's scary.
I don't remember what like Demba Ba would have gone
no,
for.
No. What they would have bought these players for is what you're talking about.
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
But what did they buy him for? I'm sure that was he like a no-name signing at the time?
I think he came in under the great policy of buying players under the radar, which Newcastle were very successful at for a while. Remember, they had Yohan Cabaye and players like that, and they brought them into the club, and they had a short period, which seems like forever ago, under Alain Pardieu, the French manager, where they excelled. But yeah, no, I honestly think, depressingly, we're going back to Owen and then Alan Shearer beforehand for those big figures. I didn't want to make this a Magpies chat, but that's why maybe I was completely off the wall to suggest that they would even countenance 30 million.
No, I don't know. You may not be. I might be off the wall for saying three. By the way, one other thing on the game.
Yep.
Before the game started, I mean, JJ, what about that national anthem?
Oh, stirring rendition. Absolutely.
Malaya Emma, 7 years old.
Yeah.
And she was incredible.
It's not her first rodeo. She was, she sang at, the StubHub Center, I believe. That's where she was spotted. Well, not spotted, but where she came to prominence. And she's a beautiful voice. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, really does. We'll have a chance before the end of the year to kind of look back on the MLS season as a whole. There's already moves starting to be made for next year. I'll actually get to some of them in my Man of the Match a little bit later on in the show, but there's talk now Zlatan staying with the Galaxy when everybody thought he was headed to Italy. So there is still a lot to talk about with that league, and we will continue to do that in the weeks to come. Let's see, JJ, we've got a mailbag coming up, but before we do that, I want to tell you about Indochino, because I told you I'm here in Las Vegas, and I'm seeing so many people with ill-fitting suits wearing sneakers, and it's, you know, it's difficult. And
it's so crying out for Indochino.
So I want to tell people about Indochino, because there's a better way. It's North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Now, here's how it works. You visit a stylist at one of their showrooms, get your measurements taken, or you can just do it by yourself at home without having to get off the couch. Well, I guess you do have to get off the couch to stand up to take your measurements, but you know what I mean. It's very simple. And then you go to Indochino.com, choose your fabric, both inside and out, choose your design customization, submit your measurements with your choices, and then just sit back, wait, and relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in just a couple weeks. Now, this week, listeners to this podcast can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering offside at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for made-to-measure premium suits. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com. Promo code offside for any premium suit, just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit that looks good with sneakers as well. Let's see, JJ, we continue now. Do you have a mailbag prepared?
I do indeed. Atzio Soccer Pod, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Danny Evers kicks us off. Hey guys, I just watched the Amazon documentary on Steven Gerrard, as did I, Danny, and really enjoyed it. As a new follower of the Premier League, is there any other soccer documentaries you can recommend? Especially those dealing with the Premier League. Thanks for all of your insight. You have been really helpful to me as a new fan. I gain a greater understanding of the game, both on and off the pitch, from listening to you guys. Keep it up. Danny, far too kind. Actually, I'm going to use this to promote something that's very interesting. They are not currently a Premier League team, but they had a pretty spectacular fall from grace right to League One, and that is Sunderland. And there is a lot of hoopla and a lot of excitement about the behind the scenes documentary that is coming up about a season for the Black Cats. Sunderland Till I Die will be released on December 14th, so that's this week, 2 days time, on Netflix. And it's garnering pretty rave reviews in terms of its candid nature, how honest it is. And look, I am one of those people who believes that if, say for example, I'm in the library and I see a book about Derek Jeter, I'm not crazy interested in it because he's such a successful character. Mm-hmm. Often the more interesting characters or stories in sports are the falls from grace, and this is a spectacular one, so I'm looking forward to that. So maybe that helps answer your question, Danny.
Can I throw one in there?
Please.
Remember leading up to the 2014 World Cup, 30 for 30 at ESPN released a series of just like amazing soccer documentaries, and it was highlighted by Hillsborough. If you are somebody who's new, because we do have people who are not just new listeners to our podcast, but are people who are kind of just like dipping their toe in the soccer pool through our podcast. If you are one of those people and you know of Hillsborough, but you don't exactly know all about it or the details, JJ, I mean, you're a diehard Liverpool fan. Hillsborough is still a thing that resonates in your mind like it was yesterday. And even you would say that it was so well done, and it took you back to that place. It's so emotional, and I think anybody who is curious about the events of the Hillsborough disaster should absolutely go back and watch that 30 for 30, because it is really powerful.
Yeah, that's a great shout by you. I defy you to watch it without bursting into tears, but it's worth it. It's a very important... In terms of the history of the Premier League and where we are now in terms of soccer stadium and soccer safety, it's a very important story. Dan Gordon is the producer, producer director, and he's a friend of mine, and it's very moving, and that is a super shout by you. Greg Roberts, as per every other email, love the pod and listen every week. All right. We knew this was going to come up, so just on the Sterling racism issue, I can't understand why this isn't dealt with by the security staff at the stadium. A couple of years ago here in Australia, we had an incident where one of our black Australian football players was racially abused. Literally, he pointed out the fan to staff, and the fan was removed from the game. The fans that think they have the right to be abusive, racist or not, do not deserve to stay in their seats. Perhaps if a few more are made an example of in this way, we might see a little less of this. Where else in the world, other than at a sports stadium, do people think it's okay to scream profanities at the top of their lungs at someone doing their job? The number one reason why I no longer take my kids to watch soccer games. Should probably update on that. The BBC reported yesterday that Chelsea have suspended 4 people from attending matches while an investigation into the alleged racial abuse of Manchester City forward Raheem Sterling takes place. Just to address the question there, I'm not sure there was security staff close to that incident that they would haul them out, but certainly it's something to think about. I think the reason they don't is because they fear that it might develop into fan violence. I think they try and identify and prosecute afterwards. I think that's the policy anyway.
Well, I think what has to happen is there has to be some kind of system within stadiums. Like if this guy says he doesn't want to bring his kid to games because he's uncomfortable by what he's hearing in the ground around
him.
So then there needs to be, like, so many stadiums have this, and I'm sure that stadiums in England do as well. You know, you can send a text message anonymously from your seat to the security department in a stadium, and then they will come and address whatever the situation is. You know, so, like, I know people are hesitant to sometimes do that kind of thing because they're afraid it might create a scene afterwards. But look, if you've got a kid next to you and somebody is yelling, you know, racial slurs towards a player on the field and you're horrified by it, as you probably should be, then I'm sorry, send the text. Like other fans, I think, need to police this situation to let their own people, their own fan base know, like, stop. This is not okay.
Yeah.
Like, just because he plays for the other team, you can't be saying these things. It's awful.
And John Barnes, who was just so eloquent on this over the week, and you should just Google John Barnes and his article for The Guardian in particular. The idea that we can solve racism in football before we solve it in general society is absurd, and that's part of the problem. Moving on, John Wagner. Speaking of comedy in football, that's not what we were doing there. We were talking about comedy in football last week, just to be clear. We haven't heard recently from the Man United fan commentator with the crazy analogies. That is, of course...
Mark Goldbridge.
That was good comedy. However, John says, nothing comes close to Maradona, though.
No,
We've got so much mileage out of that, it's unbelievable. Frank Barker has a question that I should have put to you beforehand.
Oh, why do you do these things to me? You know I'm not good at thinking on my feet.
Frank Barker, love the pod. Third time, long time. Bar talk question for you. Which manager and player would you choose right now to have on your respective teams for the next 5 years guaranteed? I'd choose Pep and Mbappe, which is a kind of a killer combo. There's no question about that. What do you think, Andrew?
Oh my God.
It's a tough one. I thought about it. You know, I love Klopp. So I'm loath to replace Klopp with anyone.
Well, it's hard not, I mean, look, it's hard to argue against.
Here, look, I'm gonna give you Klopp and Lorenzo Insigne. You know how much I love him as a player, and I'm just wondering what kind of player he could be in a Klopp system. But Mbappe, by the way, it's hard not to pick Mbappe either.
No, in fact, he would probably, not to cop out, but I, like, I think he would be mine as well. I'm just trying to think of who my manager would be. I mean, Pep is...
Just do what I did and go with your own manager, who right now is a rising
well,
star.
Well, I do love him dearly.
Yes, you do.
Nah, yeah, I don't know. First, how dare you just spring this on me? I need time with things like this to let it settle.
Yeah, it's amazing the amount of times I thought about it and I came up with players that we already have and the manager we already have. You know, when you're happy and you're nappy, clap your hands. And certainly after yesterday, we're both pretty happy, I would imagine. Mike, at Mike Wubwub. Bill Burr talks about watching the Liverpool game and Peaky Blinders on his last pod. He compares Mo Salah to Wayne Gretzky. So I have not heard the latest Monday morning podcast from Bill Burr, but now I'm just absolutely...
Wait, he talked about those two things?
Bill Burr talks about watching the Liverpool game and Peaky Blinders on his last pod and compares Mo Salah to Wayne Gretzky.
So then conceivably he would love us.
Oh my God, he would... Well, would he?
Well, he'd probably love you, I'm sure. He doesn't care for Philadelphia, right? So he would probably take issue with me.
The Philadelphia incident was just because Philadelphia fans were booing all his buddies who were doing the training.
Right, but I'm sure that's probably clouded the way he views the whole city.
Yeah,
that's what happens.
Maybe. We got to move on, though. Philip Jones. Should people be calling Spurs' result a miracle because they tied Barcelona to make it out of the group, or should we expect them to at least tie a side that is only 2 to 3 starters and nothing to play for? Or is miracle simply referring to their whole escape? I'm going to feel that one. Miracle is the whole escape.
Yes, correct.
They have like 8 points from 6 games. Reyes,
well, and they had 1 from their first 3, right?
Right. So it really was a miracle in the overall sense of that group. Reyes sends us a link to the Manchester Evening News article about record-setting Manchester United. This is in the aftermath of the 2-2 draw at St. Mary's against Southampton. Wait for this. United have come back from being 2 goals behind in a game to take a draw more often than any other team, and that comeback from 2 goals down was the 23rd time they have done so. No other team has done that more than Manchester United in Premier League history.
It's the most dangerous lead in sports, especially against them, apparently.
Yeah, but honestly, what were Fergie's teams synonymous for? That kind of a comeback. Our second last, our penultimate one, comes from Marion at Radford 333. Atsio Sarkopod, just saw the highlights of Dortmund's win in Champions League. I thought Pulisic looked good. Can you all tell me why he's not playing regularly? I know Sancho has played great, but Larsson, is he really better than Pulisic? Do you all think Dortmund sell Pulisic in January? Marion, I would say if you Google Caught Offside ESPN and Stefan Butzko, you'll get the podcast we did where we addressed Stefan Butzko, who is ESPN FC's Dortmund authority, and we asked him about Pulisic's long-term future at the club, and that was about a month ago, and he seemed certain that Pulisic would remain at Borussia Dortmund for the future, but certainly the way it looks right now, he has fallen down the pecking order, and the conversations about him moving are almost weekly.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder if it's in his best interest to leave. And I hate saying that because I do love the way Dortmund play and he has thrived in their system. But if you can't be a regular, like that's the number one thing that we talk about for these American players. They have to be in a place where they're going to get regular first team minutes. And it's just, I don't know, it's just become a little too inconsistent.
Yeah. And honestly, with him out of the team, they've been excellent. So, that's just the sad reality. Sancho has been brilliant. He's been utterly brilliant.
He's great. Yep. Oh man, he's great. Yeah.
And finally, this came in at full time yesterday. I just wanted to read it to you, my friend. Zach Arfee. Atsio Sarkopod, where's old Spursy Andy at? Because we can continue to dream. Come on, you Spurs. Let's freaking go.
I'll tell you what, man.
He was calling for you straight away. He wanted old Spursy Andy.
In my lifetime as a Tottenham fan, it was the goal and then the last, 8 to 9 minutes of just like the nerves of whether or not Inter would score or if Barcelona would somehow cruelly get one. It ranks among my favorite memories as a Tottenham fan. So it's, Tottenham have had some great years. Over the last 5 years or so. But with that has come some unbelievably depressing defeats and demoralized. Honestly, I mean, look, with great success also comes great failure. Like, you know, the New England Patriots are one of the greatest and in the greatest dynasty that the sport has ever seen. But think of some of their losses, like horrific defeats to the Giants, to the Eagles last year in the Super Bowl, like some really terrible ones. So that does come with being a good side, and Tottenham have been on the wrong end of a lot of those. So, you know, when these good ones come around, enjoy it. Really, really enjoy it. That was a lot of fun yesterday.
Yes, indeed.
Is that it for the mailbag?
That is indeed it for the mailbag for this week.
At CO Soccer Pod and CaughtOffsidePod at gmail.com. We're going to do a super quick what to watch for. But before we do that, you have things to tell me about stamps.
Stamps.com, Andrew, our old friends who are holiday season regulars. They're probably one of the more important websites this time of year, because think about all the things you've got to do, and one of the massive jobs you've got to do in this busy time of the year is to make sure you have stamps so you can send your Christmas cards, letters. It's just so important. As you know, especially at the post office, it's a super busy time. That's why we use Stamps.com. It saves us so much time during the hectic holiday season. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Post Office right to your desktop. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Then the mail carrier picks it up. No trips to the post office required. It couldn't be easier. Print postage any day, any time. Stamps.com is always open. Stamps.com not only saves you time, it saves you money. Stamps.com helps you print the right amount of postage every time. Never overpay again, which is a big problem for me. And with Stamps.com, you get discounts on postage you can't even get at the post office. With all the time and money you'll save, Stamps.com is the best gift you can give yourself this holiday season. I use Stamps.com because I'm an immigrant. I've got to get access to stamps for this busy holiday period and make sure none of my relatives are upset that I haven't made contact via the medium of Christmas card.
Well, that's a beautiful Christmas story, I gotta say.
Well, I'm not quite finished with it, Andrew, if you just let me.
Well, that was quite a pause.
No, I was just pausing to catch my breath because I'm so excited about Stamps.com.
Get a hold of yourself.
Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in offside, OFFSIDE. That's Stamps.com. Enter offside, not offside. Stamps.com.
There we go. Appropriate pause length.
No, I got something caught in my throat, and because you're so impatient to get back to whatever gambling you're doing, I'm sure the kids' college fund is gone at this point.
What to watch for? We got a few Premier League matches. This is a big weekend. Saturday, it starts early, 7:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Manchester City and Everton. City looking to bounce back from a surprise. Well, it's Chelsea, and it's at Chelsea, so I guess surprising is strong, but it's Manchester City, and we've just come to, like, never, ever, ever expect them to do anything wrong.
Right.
So a defeat of any kind is like, oh my, I don't care who it's against. It's shocking. You wonder, were we overstating City's dominance somewhat? I say no. I think the season has still pretty much gone the way we would have expected. It's a lot to ask them to go through an entire 38-game season without losing once, and I think losing at Stamford Bridge is not, you know, there's nothing shocking or horrifying in that for them. I know they're technically second right now in the league, but that it really hasn't changed the way that I feel about them.
No, but it's left the door open for Liverpool, who are now top of the league, and this weekend is going to be fascinating. If Everton can do something against Manchester City and Liverpool beat United, oh boy, we've got a real race on then. And look, this is what we were looking for. We were all saying who's going to blink first, and it's been Manchester City.
Yeah, and you mentioned Liverpool and Manchester United. That is Sunday at 11 a.m. Manchester United are 16 points back of Liverpool, which just feels like a huge number for this stage in the season for United.
Sorry to cut across you, Andrew. You make a good point, though. That's the most points United have been behind Liverpool at before Christmas since Christmas Eve 1990.
It's unbelievable.
And that was coming off the end of a Liverpool period of dominance. Liverpool were the reigning champions.
Yeah, I guess for me, I look at United right now, and the difference from even last year, which was kind of disappointing, even though they did finish high in the table, they're defending. It's like what we associate so closely with Jose Mourinho, but they're giving up a goal and a half per game, I think, so far this season. Last year that was down at 0.7, so they're more than double what they were a year ago. So it's a problem, and if they don't figure that out, it's going to continue to be a problem. Let's see. We bring it down the stretch now for
Red card.
I'm going to go first super fast here. Mine goes to Stoke City supporters, JJ.
Are we
in unison here?
Oh, no, we're not, but go on.
The Championship Club, I'm reading from the BBC, has agreed to donate money towards the repair of Vale Park, which was damaged at a match between the club's under-21 teams on December 4th, Port Vale said. Police said that a large section of Stoke fans had been, quote, disruptive. Seats, toilets, and windows were broken in the away stand. In a statement, the League Two outfit said Stoke City have agreed to donate their share of the net proceeds from the gate towards the cost of repairs, which is exactly what they should be doing. I don't know if people should be grateful that that's a thing that's happening. The club did not reveal the amount that was going to be paid. More than 150 officers had to be deployed to Vale Park during the Check-A-Trade Trophy fixture. 14 arrests were made last week, and the force said that two were made on Wednesday. Port Vale said it would focus on repairing the damage before the game with Cheltenham Town on Saturday. I mean, this, like, destroying toilets. What? Like,
Andrew, it's the Check-A-Trade Trophy, and it's at Port Vale. I need some Stoke fans to chime in and explain why that's such a contentious match where you have to go absolutely crazy and destroy property.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, have you ever seen the movie Dewey Cox, Walk Hard?
I have, like, not. My friend is obsessed with it, though.
It's a truly hilarious movie. But there's a scene, like, when he gets angry for whatever reason, the thing that he does is he goes in the bathroom and he just rips sinks out of the wall. Like, that's his go-to move when he's enraged. And, like, that's what I picture. There's a bunch of, like, Dewey Coxes walking into the Port Vale restrooms and just, like, tearing toilets and sinks off the wall. It's too bizarre. Very, very strange. What do you have?
I've got a more lighthearted one. This is from the BBC. Ex-Spurs player, legend Glenn Hoddle, joked that his recovery from cardiac arrest was not helped by the dramatic way that Spurs made the Champions League last 16. Hoddle collapsed at the BT Sports Studios on the 27th of October on his 61st birthday, and later underwent surgery before returning home to recuperate. Spurs scored a late goal to secure a draw at Barcelona and go through. That just wasn't good for my recovery, but a great performance. Well done, boys. Deserve to win, tweeted Hoddle. You know, we always talk about this team is killing me. Well,
oh my God.
Yeah. Well, it's great to hear that Glenn is doing better and that he's making a full recovery. I'm delighted to hear that. But Spurs, can you please remember, one of your legends does not need this kind of drama in his life.
Yeah.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
I will go first, JJ. I went with FC Cincinnati, as they seem to be building their club the right way with defending, because it matters greatly in this league, as we see time and time again. Bobby Warshaw from MLSsoccer.com, he pointed this out in an article. The bottom six teams in the West and the five teams in the East that missed the 2018 MLS Cup playoffs were the 11 worst defenses, going by the amount of goals conceded. So, with that in mind, FC Cincinnati have done it right, and they've acquired both Greg Garza from Atlanta and Kendall Waston via trades, both of them yesterday. This was from Opta Jack regarding Waston. They said he won 73% of his aerial duels last season. That was fourth best among MLSers with at least 75 aerial duels. They've got Fernando Addy up front as their designated player. They're going to enter the season with a lot of USL guys. I think they have 9 guys from their USL side, which is always a risk. Mm. So if you're going to do that, then it's important to have a good defense in the back, and Garza and Waston is a great, truly great starting point for them. With those two as, like, kind of your core, they may enter next season already having one of the top 5 or 6 best defenses in the league. So great start for them. I'll be very curious, because we now live in an era, JJ, where whether you're an expansion side or not, you're expected to start and hit the ground running. We saw it with Atlanta United. We saw it, of course, with LAFC this season. Other clubs like Minnesota have maybe been a little bit slower to get going, but yeah, I think that there's a lot of hype and excitement around Cincinnati, so they're going to be expected to do well quickly, and I think this is a good start.
Yeah, I'm just excited, and I hope that Richie Ryan, former Sligo Rovers centre midfielder and FC Cincinnati midfielder, gets his chance in MLS, because he's at the end of his career, really, but he's a fantastic player. And
I'll say a prayer for him.
I would love to see him step out in MLS next season for Cincinnati. My man of the match is Team Wellington of New Zealand, who are the Oceania representative at the World Club Cup, which kicked off today in the United Arab Emirates. Team Wellington, who are largely an amateur outfit, led the United Arab Emirates Pro League champions, Al Ahly, at one stage 3-0 today. before being hit with a second half onslaught capped off with a goal by Sweden's Marcus Berg, who played at the World Cup, which sent the game to extra time and penalties, which Team Wellington unfortunately lost. Had Welly won, they would have played African champions Esperance Sportive de Tunis for the right to play one of the big boys in the semi-final. It would have been either Real Madrid or recently crowned Copa Libertadores champions River Plate, and that would be next Tuesday or Wednesday. Quite an effort from the New Zealand amateurs, and it just goes to show you, you know, this is not the most perfect competition in the world, the World Club Cup, but it goes to show you that you've got to have a meritocracy in sport. You've got to allow the smaller teams a chance and a shot at the big boys. That was unbelievable. That's an amateur team against a very rich pro league team, and the amateur team nearly pulled it off. What an amazing effort by those Kiwis, and well done to them.
Well, good stuff. That is cool. Good for them to get as close as they did.
Can I say something before we get out? This has been a logistical nightmare caused by the fact that you value the winter meeting so much. I want to thank...
And then I want to keep my job, but yeah, continue.
I want to thank one of the best guys in the business, one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He is an absolute gold star and a total professional. And that is our producer, RJ, who's behind the glass. The man's a legend. Oh, I have so much respect for him. I don't think he even knows it.
No, definitely, because you hide your respect for others, as I have come to learn the hard way.
I rarely show it. So he's going to help me in the publishing of this bad boy and getting it out to your ears. So when you're listening, just remember you're listening because of RJ.
Yeah, you really are, because if it was left to you, this would be out in like 4 weeks' time, roughly, give or take.
I'm quite slow with the editing, but, you know, I bring certain je ne sais quoi to the proceedings that is beyond beyond the nuts and bolts of editing.
Yeah, I understand. You're a morale guy, one of those. It's not about results. It's about morale that you provide. By the way, before we get out, I did want to say, with Joe Gomez already out, it bears mentioning that Joel Matip's going to be out for 6 weeks for Liverpool with a broken collarbone. So I thought that was important to get in as well. Hey, I'm going to go on a bender right now because I'm in Las Vegas. I need to get in my final moments. This was fun, my friend. I'm glad it all worked out. Thank you, RJ. You're right. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you when I get back.
Take care, man.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.